some books need very, very little introduction. About all that you have to say is that they were written about a certain time and a certain thing, and then go on with it. Other books need a lot of introduction. For instance, last night in the Corinthian class, I spent the entire hour just on introductory material. And unless one gets that introductory material, they really cannot appreciate the book of 1 Corinthians. Then after that, there was the book of Job. In the book of Job, we spent just really a few minutes on that because one does not need a great deal of introduction. In fact, it would get boring to talk very long about the introduction of the book of Job. So it is with every book in the Bible. We need, though, to know certain material before we can understand certain things that are used in that particular book. Now tonight, we're going to be studying the introductory material of 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. All that we say tonight will apply to all three of those books. Now, every book has its own unique reason for being in the Bible. That God has given us an answer to every problem, and there is a reason why we have 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. Now, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, if one asks, what is the one word that comes to your mind when we talk about John, what would that word be? Love. That's right. So we say we're going to be talking then about the books of love. Well, the answer to that is yes and no. So the way I'm going to answer that is no, we're not going to be talking about love. We're going to be talking about something else. Now, while we're talking about something else, love then is going to become a very predominant part of that thing that we're talking about. But if we just go into studying the book of 1st, 2nd, 3rd John and think that we're studying about books of love, in just a moment we're going to hear John as he starts out talking to these false teachers. And there's not a writer in the entire Bible that speaks in more dogmatic, direct, and shall I say, what word am I after? Insulting words than what John actually uses. He just comes out and he says, if you say that you haven't sinned, you're a liar. He said, if you do certain things and you say that you know Jesus Christ, but you don't keep his commandments, again, you're a liar. And he just goes on and on talking about this. Just certain people, you're just a liar. That's all that there is to it. There's no in-between ground here with him. He doesn't say, if you say this, then you've missed the point. You don't understand what the truth is. He just gets right down to it and charges people with being false teachers and with being liars. And all of a sudden, you say, what has happened to love? If this is a book about love, why is he talking in that particular way? But if we understand why he's saying the things he's saying, then we understand that really it is a part of love in the way that he is talking then. So, we get down to the background of 1 John. Now, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John are going to be dealing with a problem that they had in the church. As one looks at all the books of the New Testament, really, if you start out the book of Romans, that's put in there to teach a doctrinal lesson about salvation by faith. The book of Acts is a history book to teach us the history of New Testament Christianity. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John are biographies to teach us the life of Jesus Christ. Ephesians is a doctrinal book to tell you the place of the church. Dot, 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 dot. On down we could go. See, talking about every book has its place. Now, the book of 1 Corinthians, by the way, is a book that deals with church problems. It deals with a lot of problems, just one problem after another, the entire book of 1 Corinthians. All right, now, the books of 1st, 2nd, 3rd John are going to deal with one major problem. Not a lot of problems, but it's going to deal with one major problem. Now, whereas the book of 1 Corinthians deals with a haughty attitude, egotism, it deals with fornication, lawsuits, expediencies, marriage, false doctrine about the resurrection. It deals with things like that. The book of 1 John is going to be dealing with a doctrine that was creeping into the church and causing a lot of problems in New Testament times, and that doctrine is called Gnosticism. So we're going to be talking now about Gnosticism, and that's a word really that we don't hear as we are preaching and so forth. You just, really, when's the last time you heard the word Gnosticism? You see, if somebody's preaching. It's kind of silly to even use the word. Now, the way that you spell that word is G-N-O-S, G-N-O-S-T-I-C-I-S-M, Gnosticism. Now, the people who teach this doctrine of Gnosticism were known as Gnostics. You spell that G-N-O-S-T-I-C. They were a Gnostic. The word Gnostic in Greek means knowledge. I mean, that really is what it is. The Greek word is gnosis. And so if Paul is going to encourage the Corinthians to grow in knowledge, he will say, grow in gnosis. And so there were a group of people, though, that latched on to this, and they said the most important thing in all of religion is knowledge. That is the very center and the core of it. And so all of their doctrine that they preached was centered around knowledge. And so they were called knowledge people then, you see, or people who practiced knowledge, or Gnostics. And the doctrine that they preached was Gnosticism. All right, now we want to talk about this Gnosticism. In fact, tonight we're not going to get into the text of 1 John, other than just to refer to it and really see here the thing that it's talking about. We're just going to spend our time tonight talking about Gnosticism. Now let me tell you that this doctrine of Gnosticism really is the only word I know is a stupid doctrine. That's the only word that I know. It's not a doctrine that is a little far off. It's not a doctrine that somebody just missed the mark on. But it's just a crazy, idiotic, wild-eyed idea that came to pass in that day and crept into the church. Now, it's amazing how these doctrines can creep into the church. It's amazing how these crazy doctrines really get a foothold. Now, I understand how anybody could misunderstand any given passage in the New Testament. I understand how somebody could miss the idea that you have to be baptized for remission of sins. Now, you might say, well, I just don't believe anybody could miss that. Oh, yeah, sure you could. I understand how a person could be reading along, and if they started out in the book of Romans, and there Paul is talking about salvation by faith, and we're saved by faith, and we're saved by faith, and he drives that point home, we are saved by faith. They get the idea, we're saved by faith. So then when they get to Acts 2:38, and they read there, repent and be baptized every one of you, what are they going to say about baptism? Is baptism necessary for salvation? No. Why? Why will they miss that? Because they've already predetermined in their mind, now wrongly, but they've already predetermined that man is saved by faith alone. Now, you get that in your mind, then any verse that you read, that even if the verse says baptism doth also now save you, they know that that's what it sounds like. It sure does sound like baptism saves you. But I know it doesn't. And why do I know baptism does not save you? Because I learned that Paul teaches baptism doesn't save you. So then I see how a person then can get off on that. But there are some doctrines that are just so far out that you say, how can anybody get off on it? Now here really is what the doctrine actually boils down to, the core of the doctrine. It's going to be teaching several things. And that is, it boils down to Jesus was a mere man, and the Christ came to live in him, and lived in him for just a little while, and then left him. So the Christ didn't die, the Christ was not born of a virgin, Jesus wasn't born of a virgin, it just seemed that way. And so, it is a doctrine that teaches that things just appear to be a certain way. And you say, well, how could that be? Well, do we have any religions today that teach really the same thing, that you're not really here? You know anybody that teaches you're not really here? The Christian Scientists. They teach you are not here. Now, they have practitioners to heal the sick. They tell you, don't go to a doctor if you get sick. It's against your religious principles to go to a doctor. You go to their practitioner. Do you know what that practitioner does to you? He treats everybody the same. If you go up there, Carlos goes up with a headache, he sits down and he teaches Carlos, really, all matter, all physical things is evil, and you do not have any physical body, Carlos. Now, your problem is, you are wavering in the faith. You are getting close to sin here. In fact, you probably are a sinner. That's the reason you have a headache. Because you think you're here. And that is just absolutely wrong. That's like if I came in tonight and told you I've been studying today and I've almost concluded there is no God. In fact, I did conclude today there is no God. What would you think of me? Would you say, well, everybody to their own opinion? Or would you say, you are a sinner? Well, they think, if Carlos thinks he's here, he's faltered in the faith. So the practitioner then goes through all the things to show him you're not here. Well, if Carlos isn't here, what about his headache? Does he have a headache? No, couldn't have a headache because he doesn't have a head. And his problem is he just thinks he has a head. And since he thinks he has a head, he thinks he has a headache. And his whole problem is in his thinker. And so he really is not here. Now, you say, are you sure? Yep, that's what they teach. That's the heart and core of their religion. And you say, that is so silly. I know it. Yet there are thousands upon thousands of people today that believe that and practice that and give their money, and that is a very, very rich religion. All right, now Gnosticism really is about the same thing. Now, those kinds of things, I don't know why people accept them. I don't know why people will get caught up in anything of that nature. But they do. In fact, it appears that the more exotic, that's not the way I want to go at it. What am I after? The more weird the theory is, the more that people will flock to it. All right? Gnosticism was that kind of an idea and a theory in the New Testament times, and New Testament Christians were bothered by it. So what we're going to do tonight is talk a little bit about that doctrine, and then it will help us as we go through and we understand this. Now, there are other books of the Bible, by the way, that make reference to this also. And that is, Paul makes reference to it in the book of 1 Corinthians and in the books of Timothy and in the books of Colossians. There he makes mention to certain things, and these are things that have to do with Gnosticism. If I don't get back especially to the book of Colossians, would somebody raise your hand before class and say, what about Colossians? And then I'll flip over there after we've said what we want to say. I'll flip over there and show you a passage, and then it will begin to make sense to you and say, oh, okay, I see now the idea here that he was talking about. Okay. Let's go back now and take a look, really, at Gnosticism. Now, Gnosticism, they say, came out of the doctrine of Plato. Now, we extol Plato and Aristotle and some of those old philosophers, but the philosophy that they had was really a weird thing. They believed very, very strange things that you just shake your head and say, I wonder how in the world that they could believe these things. Many of those men were open homosexuals. They were public homosexuals that taught people that homosexuality is superior to heterosexuality. And they taught people that every man should especially have a young boy. And if you could get a young boy, that was the greatest. Now, does that sound familiar in our society today? You see that we're having where homosexuality is running rampant? Well, it didn't originate with us. It originated with these philosophers back there, like we're talking about. All right, now, Plato had a certain philosophy, and the reason that these men became famous is because they were smarter than the average man. You have to give them credit for that. They did a lot of thinking and tried to work out a lot of the problems, but this is what they spent their time doing, rather than working on the farm, rather than getting food. They ate off of other people, and they just sat around and thought. And the thing that they think about, well, what do all people think about? Everybody rationalizes about certain things. What is it, you suppose, that they thought about? All those philosophers back there. They thought about such things as, where did we come from? Now, of course, that's a good question, isn't it? And that's a question everybody has to wrestle with. And if somebody doesn't wrestle with that question, why, you haven't really been doing much thinking. From whence did we come? How did this world get here? And what is my purpose in life? Where am I going after I die? Where am I going to go? Now, you and I, those questions are very, very simple questions. But why are they simple questions? Because it is plainly stated in the Bible, isn't it? See, the Bible just plainly states those questions. Number one, number two, here are your answers. So those questions really do not give a Christian any problem. The only problem that we as Christians have with those questions is, will we believe them? Will we really believe them and put our life and put our faith, you see, in them so that we will truly be dedicated to God? That's the only problem we have. We don't have a problem of trying to figure those things out because God has answered them. But now, just try to picture yourself without the Bible. Suppose that you had grown up in a place where you did not have the Bible. You had never heard of any inspired book, and you were just living there. Would you try to wrestle with those questions? Would you wonder if you had a purpose here? Would you wonder that if you died and when you die, what will happen to you? Well, certainly you would. And so these men wrestled with these questions, and they came up with all kinds of wild-eyed ideas. Now, here really is the thing that happened. This Gnosticism is based on the idea that there are two gods, really, two basic gods. Now you say, how did they get the idea that there are two basic gods? All right, they got the idea this way. And that is, as we look at ourselves, we have intelligence. We have desires. And everybody has a desire to have good things to happen to you. You want to go to some good place when you die. You want good things to happen to you now. You want people to like you. Everybody has that desire. And yet, every one of us knows that we fall short. Every individual knows that you have said things you should never have said. You have done things you should never have done. You have thought things you should never have thought. Every person knows they've done that. And so, then we just have to face the fact that I'm a sinner. I have done things I would not want to do. I don't like other people who do those things. And yet, I've said the things that I don't like other people when they say them. I've done those things, and yet I don't like other people to do those things to me. So, let's face it, I'm a sinner. Well, here I am. Now, how am I going to rationalize that? How am I going to work on that to harmonize that problem, see? So they said, okay, here it is. We all know, just from looking at ourselves, you see, I'm sitting out under a tree now. I'm Plato, sitting out under a tree. Do I have my Bible to read? No, I do not accept any inspired books. I'm sitting out under a tree thinking. And so as I'm sitting out under a tree thinking this, I know that I have a mind in here. I know that I have a mind, and I know that my mind is unique. I know that it's different than an animal. I'm higher than an animal. I have these desires. I can rationalize. There is something inside my body that is pretty spatial. Anybody could know that. So we call it our mind, or what else could we call it? And they call it the same thing. The spirit of man, that man does have a spirit. There is a part of me that is not physical. There is a part of me that that is in a different realm other than being physical. But on the other hand, I look at my hands and they're dirty. I stub my toe and it hurts. And so then I know that I also have a body. Now then, this body right here, of course, is physical. So I know that there is physical things. I walk around, I see physical trees and physical dogs, and I see you, and so there is the physical. Now then, I work on this thing. Up here, I want to do that which is good, really. That's what I would like to do. My answer up here is yes. Yes. I want good things to happen to me. I want to be a good guy. I want to do good things. But the answer down here is no, I don't do them. I sin. There are things that I do that I shouldn't do. Now, I can know all of this without ever reading the Bible. See, I understand that the Bible says all sin falls short of the glory of God. But I don't need the Bible to tell me these things. I can rationalize that. All right, now, where am I going, you see, in all of this? What is life after death going to be like? So, what then they did was sit around and work on this situation. Now, here is where they worked on. They came to the conclusion. They said, actually, it is the body's fault when I do something wrong. When I do a no-no, that is because of my physical body. It's not really because of my mind and because I want to. It's because of the desires of my body. And so, from my experiences in life, I conclude that this right here is I want to. It's because of the desires of my body. And so, from my experiences in life, I conclude that this right here is evil. That it's evil. Physical things are evil. And spiritual things up here are good. That must be the answer. My spirit is good. Everything in the spiritual world is good. But everything in the physical world is evil. And so then, we now have a basis to start working on. And that is that all material things are evil. They're bad. All spiritual things are good. But then we have a problem. And that is that as we begin to look at God, here we see that God up here is a spirit and that God is all good. He is 100% good. Nobody questioned that. Whatever they called him, they said he was good. Now, down here is the material world. Whatever you want to call it, the world, the physical, but any material thing down here. And this down here was 100% evil. Down here. 100% evil. All right, now, how are we going to get these things together? In other words, as you begin to look at this, we have a philosophical question. Now, this is what philosophy is all about. You see, in case you say, well, I believe I'll go to the university and study a course in philosophy. Well, here's your first assignment. Go home and work this thing out. See? In here, sit down and try to work it out, and you start figuring all of these things. Now then, how are we going to get these things right here together? Something that's 100% good cannot be tainted with evil, and something 100% evil that can't be tainted with good, how are we going to get them together? Well, even I know that you can't get them together. I mean, if that is the case, see, you can't get them together. Well, then that raises a big question. If we can't get them together, then we've got a problem. Because down here I am, and I'm living on a great big ball that's called the earth. And what's the earth made of? Spirit or physical things? It's physical. Now then, I know that there is a world that's down here, and I know that the physical is here. How to get here? How to get here? You see, before we started our class, it was pretty simple. God created it, right? See, that generally is the answer that all people have come to. All people throughout all times, whether they believed in the Bible or not, they concluded, after they thought about it, God created the world. But now then, you and I, since we got so smart, since we sat down under the tree and got to thinking, you see, about these things, we now have come up with this, that God is all good, the material is all bad, and therefore God could not have created the universe. It's just that simple. So now we've got our first big thought. Now as I present this to the world, I'm presenting an idea that the world hadn't heard before, right? And what does the world think about a man who presents something that they've never heard before? He's smart, isn't he? He's really a smart dude. And so, we now are starting to work up a reputation as we start working on these philosophical questions. Okay, now then, what are we going to do about this? All right, anybody got any ideas? How are we going to work this out? How would you work it out? If you have to come in the morning, suppose you have a philosophy class at 9 o'clock in the morning, you have to come in and have that worked out. You know there's a God, and you know there's a world. You know God's all good, and the world's all bad. Where did the world come from? What? God? Something all good created something all bad?
God's not all good. There's some other God that's not all good.
Then if God created it, he did something bad, he's not all good.
It wasn't bad all the time.
What?
It wasn't bad all the time.
Yeah, but if he just bad one time, then he has something bad about him.
There must have been another God that was bad.
Hey, there may be another God. Yeah, that's one. So now then over here, that's one idea. There may be another God. Well, we'll have to work on that. Whoever heard of another God? Well, that's going to be our problem for tomorrow. Okay? We'll work on that. Yep, that's one solution. There may be another bad God. Okay? He may be a bad one. What's another solution?
It wouldn't make much difference, really, whether you were good or bad, because those two things are not related in any way.
No, that's not the question. I want to know how it got here. I want to know how the world got here.
Big Bang.
Where'd the Big Bang come from? How'd the world get here? There really is only one other solution. It didn't get here. It's always been here. It's always been here. Now, of course, you and I know that the world hadn't always been here because of scientific developments that we have. The second law of thermodynamics teaches such things as this. But the other thing is, you can't get them together, so there must have been another God who created that, or it's always been here. Well, some people in this doctrine then took the philosophy, but some took both positions. Some took the idea that the material things have always been here and they are coextensive and eternal with God. Others says no, they've not always been here and God had to make them. So now then, we're going to take the idea here of a second God. Now, what about this second God? All right. Here we come back, and here we have our good God. And so they said, what really has happened is this, that God created some good things. Now, you're going to catch me in a contradiction right here. Why are you going to catch me in a contradiction?
Because the doctrine is false.
Because the doctrine is false. And there's no way to present a false doctrine without hitting some kind of a contradiction. But now, down here, somewhere, we're going to get this in here, that this God right here created another being. This right in here is a being. And then he created another being, and this being created another being, and this one, and beings started coming in, and there may have been 10,000 of them. Or there may have just been 1,000. We'll work on that day after tomorrow, how many of these there are, see. But finally, one of these fellows down here was bad. And as he was bad, he's the guy that created the world that we're in down here. And so this right here then, this fellow right here is the bad God. And so then we have this bad God doing this. Now, where, of course, is contradiction? Where did I go wrong on this? I think you said it right. What?
How could that, if that guy was 100% good, how could he have made a bad one?
Okay, that's right. It doesn't make any difference how many people you have in here. If this God is 100% good, his creation then be 100%, then that would be 100%, and you just keep on going down there. So somehow or another, this God would have to have credit somewhere or another for that. But they didn't deal with it on that basis. They dealt with it on this, and they said this God then is down here. Okay, now then we have this then, that here you are living down here on this earth, and you have a good God that you would like to serve, and then there is a bad God down here, and you're in the physical world. Right now, as you're in this physical world, there's two things now you can do about this thing. You're here, whether you like it or not. Number one is, you can try to become good. That's one thing. What's the other thing? You can say, I just don't care, I'll stay bad. I mean, you have your two options, you see in here. Now then, let's take the first option. We say, well, I want to become good. All right, so how now are we going to become good? Well, the way you become good, really, is by climbing the ladder. You start climbing the ladder. Now, by climbing the ladder, what you do is you start learning about these different intermediaries that's in here, and they call them by different names. You start learning more about these things, and the more you can learn about them, the smarter you become, the more like this God up here you will become. And so here it is. I learn about this one. Well, I'm a little bit better than the guy who doesn't know anything about it. But then somebody else learns about this one, and in addition to that, he learns about this one, and then he learns about this one, and you keep learning, and on the scale of knowledge, as you're going up, knowledge pulls you out of this sinful physical world, and knowledge brings you up here to be like God. Now, as you keep going, guess who the number one Aeon, as they call them, is the number one, the biggest, the greatest. Guess who he was? You know him. Jesus. Up here is Jesus. And so, does it pay to be a Christian? On this scale here? Suppose that I know Jesus. Does that put me ahead of the person down here? Oh yeah. Puts me way ahead of him because I have climbed the ladder almost up here, you see, to where God is. But now then, the whole thing is, as I am pulled out of here and up here, and I know Jesus. Now I want you to remember that right in here. What is the word? What's the doctrine? Gnostics, Gnosticism. As I know Jesus, as I accumulate that knowledge, I'm pulling myself out of this hole down here. Now, to a Gnostic, knowledge does the same thing as faith does to a Christian. What is it that Paul says will pull you out of the hole? It's faith, isn't it? You see, faith is going to cause you to do this. Right? The Gnostic says knowledge is the thing that is going to pull you out. And would a Gnostic give Jesus any preeminent place then? Would they give him a preeminent place? Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. See, they gave him a great place, but it is strictly by knowing him. With this, look at 1 John and look in chapter 2 and verse 3. Let's read one verse and see if our introduction has helped us at all right here. As he is writing now, he says, and hereby we know that we know him if we keep his commandments. He that saith, I know him, and keepeth not his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. Does it ring a bell now? You see? Here it is. I'm a Gnostic. You, as a faithful Christian, come up and ask me, a Gnostic, who is coming into the church. I'm in the church. I'm having people over at my home every night teaching them this new doctrine of Gnosticism. I claim to be a Christian right along with you. You come and you say, Lowell, do you know God? Oh, yes. Yes, I know God. Do you know Jesus? Oh, yes, I know Jesus. Yeah. Well, what do I mean when I say I know Him? I know the facts about Him. I know where He was born. I know how old He was when He was baptized. I know when He died. I know the facts. I know that He's the number one man. I know He's the smartest, best individual who ever lived. Yeah, I have a lot of knowledge. Now then, do I know Jesus? John says, the only person that can say, I know Him, is who? The person that obeys Him. You see where the conflict now is going to be? And as you see him fighting that Gnosticism, you can see why he gets pretty tough with these people. He's not talking to some wayward Christian, some misplaced Christian, some Christian who's made a bad application, like I talked about at the beginning of class. He's not talking about some sincere person that doesn't understand something in the New Testament. He's talking about a system of religion that absolutely brings Jesus Christ down and puts Jesus Christ in the same category as all of these other creatures that are down there. That Jesus Christ is nothing more than a created creature, but He's the number one created creature. Now, what would you say to me if I came in tonight and told you? I've been studying today and I've concluded that Jesus is not divine. That Jesus was created, just like I was created, except He's better than I am. Would you say, my Lord, you're a fine man? You see, if I said that, that really is what they're saying up here. So you can see why John gets very harsh when he's talking about that, as he is knocking and trying to destroy this doctrine of Gnosticism. Okay, now then, here's the person that says, I want to get out of this. I want to get out of sin. Well, really, what is sin? Now, don't give me the Bible answer because we're not dealing with that. We're Gnostics. What is sin? If getting out of sin is knowing, and the more you know, the higher you get out of it, what is sin? Ignorance. That's really what sin is. It's just ignorance. That there's something down here that you don't know, and so that really is what sin is. Ring a bell. Look over in chapter 3, verse 4. See what he says sin is. See it? Everyone that doeth sin also doeth lack of knowledge. No. Lawlessness. See? Sin is lawlessness. You see why he drives those points home? Now, you haven't learned anything from that verse that you didn't already know tonight before you came to class, because you knew that sin was lawlessness, didn't you? But do you see the background about it, of why John made that statement so dogmatically? Paul didn't make the statement in some other place, but John makes it, and he makes it very, very dogmatically, see? And so you're going to find John talking in a very dogmatic way, and he's going to be hitting things really hard in this. Now, what was that word that you think about when you study the book of John? 1 John, what was that word? Love. That's right. Now, how does love fit in this whole picture in here? All right. Love is going to fit in this whole picture in this sense. That John now is going to take, in his teaching right here, he's going to do two things. He's going to show that you can determine if you are a faithful Christian not on the amount of knowledge that you accumulate by these intermediary beings, but there's two ways. Number one, you must admit that this is false. He's going to judge. You must admit this is false, and you must say that Jesus is the Christ, and He came in the flesh and lived in the flesh and died. He's going to make that very plain. See? And he's going to show that is a doctrine that you have to get down and you have to say it. Look in chapter 2 and look down in verse 22. Notice what he says right in here with this background. He said, who is the liar? How'd you like to be called just to play down a liar like that? That's getting right down to it, isn't it? Now, who is the liar but he that denieth that Jesus is the Christ? This is the Antichrist, even he that denieth the Father and the Son. So, he's going to show you're going to have the right doctrine that this all is false and that Jesus is the Christ. In other words, right here, that God sent Jesus Christ down here and that Jesus Christ came down and lived in a body and died down here on this earth. That's your first thing that you're going to have to do before you can say you're a Christian. Now the next thing is, instead of being a bigot and a know-it-all, while we're thinking about being a bigot and a know-it-all, turn back to the 1 Corinthians letter where Paul makes a statement to them. Let's see now if this kind of helps us see the in just a little bit different light. In chapter 8, 1 Corinthians chapter 8. Here were people that going down sacrificing to idols and so forth, and they were arguing about certain things. They knew they could do it. Here's what they said. And Paul now is answering their argument. He said, we know that we all have knowledge. Knowledge puffeth up, but love edifieth. If a man thinketh that he knoweth anything, he knoweth not yet as he ought to know. Is Paul hitting the, slapping the hands, you see, the same thing? In other words, this kind of knowledge, all it does is puff up. After all, if I'm up here and you're down here, why shouldn't I think I'm better than you are? Because the fact of the case is, I am better than you are. Isn't that true? I mean, if I weigh 200 pounds and you weigh 100 pounds, should I think I weigh more than you do? But, see? And what would you say if I came up, I weigh 200, you weigh 100, and I say, oh, you're bigger than I am. What would you say? You say, well, you're an idiot. Right? All right? So, if you're down here on the knowledge scale and I'm up here, let's face it, who's the smartest? Who's the best? But if I said I wasn't, that would make me a bad guy, wouldn't it? So just to be true, I just have to say I am. What does knowledge do? Knowledge puffs up. What did Paul say, though, that edifies? Love. Now then, here's what John's going to do. John is going to show that there's two things. Number one, you must say Jesus came in the flesh. Number two, it's not knowledge that lifts you out and makes you a child of God. But let's get back down to earth. It's love. There is what it is. That's where love comes in. And he's going to hit love. And he's going to say, here is the way you can tell whether you're a faithful Christian. There's two basic ways you can tell. Do you believe the right thing about Jesus Christ? And do you have the right attitude towards your brethren? That is, do you love your brethren? Now, if you don't love your brother, you are a murderer. You are... Oh, he is going to get tough again, you see. Because after all, if I'm a Gnostic and I'm up here, what good is love? Let's be realistic now. Tell me why I should love you. I mean, what good would it do? And so, as a result, the historians then show us that these Gnostics didn't care for anybody. They didn't care for their brethren. They didn't care for the widows. They didn't care for the orphans and the poor. They didn't take care of anybody because this up here is the one very important thing. All right, now, in addition to this, this does another thing. If I want to grow out of this thing, if I'm a Gnostic, I then am going to put my confidence in my knowledge. But then there's another attitude that we have. Let's go back and face the facts again. Let's get back and look at the facts. Now the facts are what? The facts are God is all good, and what about material things? They're all evil. They're all evil. So I have a mind in my body. My mind would be good, but my body would be evil. And there really is nothing I can do about it. So what's a sensible thing to do? I mean, I'm in this body till I die. So what's a sensible thing to do? What? No.
Enjoy it.
Just do what you want to do. Just go out and do whatever you want to do. See? Because after all, really, if I go out and do anything, is it really sin? It's not sin. It's just my physical body, which was all evil anyway. And after all, I am being removed from this by what method? Why is it that all of this evil, whatever I do with my body, doesn't make any difference? I'm free. Why? Because I know so much. See? And so this knowledge then, and Gnosticism, will cause me to become a very, very evil individual. Just a person that says, eat, drink, and be merry. Do whatever you want to do because it doesn't make any difference anyway. All right, now there's one attitude that it has. Now, there is another attitude that it brings to pass, and that is, somebody says, no, Lowell, I don't think that you ought to go out and just eat, drink, and be merry and fulfill every desire that you possibly have because, after all, your body is totally evil. Material things are totally evil. Well, if material things are totally evil, and if I'm not going to just go out and enjoy them to the fullest extent, then what's the other sensible thing? Now remember, we're philosophers. What?
Deprive it.
Don't give it anything. Don't give it anything of what? Any physical enjoyment, right? That's called asceticism. Don't give it anything that enjoys it because it's all evil. And so if I enjoy chicken but hate beef, eat beef. See? Don't eat something that you like. When you lie down to sleep, if your body is comfortable, get up and get off of that mattress and lay on the floor. When the floor gets comfortable, put something down there, glass or something. When that gets comfortable, take a sheet of plywood, drive some nails through it. First of all, just drive them in there so that you toss all night, you know. And then, as you get used to those nails, drive them in a little farther. In other words, keep punishing your body. Because this down here, your body and this material thing is all evil. And so, the more you punish it here, the better it will be for you after life. So punish all of this evil thing. Now with that in mind, turn back to the book of Colossians. And we can see a statement that's made back there that is based on really the same thing. Right in Colossians chapter 2 and verse 18. Paul here said, and we're not going to analyze the verse, I just want to point out just a couple of things right here. He said, let no man rob you of your prize by a voluntary humility, by acting very, very humble, and worshiping of the angels. Who would be worshiping angels? See, these people here, as they're trying to climb all this ladder. See, worshiping of angels, dwelling in things which he hath seen. In other words, here I am up here. I'm up at this level right here. And I'm worshiping up in here and serving this eon or this angel that is up here. And I tell you, I actually saw the angel. The angel appeared to me last night. And oh, I am just so grateful that being such a horrible individual as I've been, that the angels would appear to such a lowly. And I put on my nice humble robe and I do all. Am I really humble? What do I think of myself? I'm up here. What do I think of myself? Let's face it, a whole lot better than you are. Or you. You're down here, see? And I'm up here. But I put on my voluntary humility, see? To tell you, I've actually seen these things, even though I'm not worthy and all of this kind of nonsense. All right? And he says, now when he does this, that individual is vainly puffed up by his fleshly mind. That is his problem. Skip to 20. If you died with Christ from the rudiments of the world, why, as though living in the world, do you subject yourself to ordinances? Handle not, nor taste, nor touch, all which things are to perish with the using after the precepts and doctrines of men. Now, this handle not, nor taste or touch. This was the doctrine that these people had who said, we must deprive ourselves. Right? What are you supposed to do to all material objects? Don't handle them. Don't taste them. Don't touch them. Don't do anything in this material realm that would give you any pleasure. That's the rule. That's the law. That's the ordinance. See? All right, now he said, that ordinance was made after the doctrine of men. Now he does go ahead and say this. He said in verse 23, which things have indeed a show of wisdom in will worship and humility and severity to the body, but are not of any value against the indulgence of the flesh. Now, it does sound good, is what he says. As you look at this, you say, oh, I won't enjoy myself. I will deprive myself of everything, and I'll hold this body under control. Now, Paul says, that does sound good. It sounds like it has some wisdom. As far as will worship is concerned, what is will worship? Worshiping as you will. See, the way that you want to worship. Well, it does sound good, but it doesn't have any value against the body. Let me ask you this. Suppose that you like salt and peanuts while you're watching TV. What is it you should not eat then? Salt and peanuts. Don't get salt and peanuts. You hate chocolate peanuts, covered peanuts. It makes you sick. What do you get then? Chocolate covered peanuts. So it'll make you sick. So that you won't enjoy anything in this life. Now, suppose you do that. You love salt and peanuts, so you don't ever get any, and you always eat the others that make you sick. Now, what will that do to your spirit? What will that do to make you closer to God? Nothing. Suppose you go eat salt and peanuts, and you like them. What will that do? Nothing. You just enjoy it. You just enjoy life. That's all it is. But what he's saying is, these things in the physical realm, that's not how you measure whether you're a spiritual person or not. And so it's this doctrine that was creeping into the church, that was beginning to invade the church all over, that the apostles at different times made different... they took the sword of the Spirit and took certain swipes at. But it was John. In 1 John, 2 John, and in 3 John, that really took the lethal blow and dealt with this doctrine directly and get away with it, showing how horrible and how wretched the doctrine actually is. So it's necessary for us to go through what we've gone through tonight, merely to bring us down to this. If we had not have gone through this, when we get over to the section to where certain people in the church were denying that Jesus came in the flesh, wouldn't that be a shocking thing? How could a Christian deny that Jesus came in the flesh? See, you shake your head and you say, I don't know. That's the reason I want to go through the whole dumb philosophy so that you could see how it originated, the conclusions they came to, why they came to these conclusions, and then you could see why they crept into the church and really started preaching then in this realm. Now, one other thing. You say, then, what about this idea of Jesus dying? Did they say that he died? Well, there were two thoughts on this. There was one group of people that says, no, he didn't die. In fact, he didn't come in the flesh. It just seemed like he did. It just seemed like he did. Isn't that the way we started class? You just think you're here. So the word dokeo in Greek means, I think. So these were called docetists. They were thinkers. They just thought. It just appeared. It was a phantom, is what they call phantomizing. People thought they saw Jesus up on the cross, but he wasn't really there. And the reason he wasn't really there, why was it he wasn't really there? What is it that's all good? What is it they can't be? They can't be physical. And so it just appeared that he was there. Others says, look, I know he was there. I saw him. See, I saw him. You're not telling me he wasn't there. Well, then they had to figure it out. What then happened? And here's what happened. Here's the other solution. That this man Jesus came and he was born in a normal birth by Joseph and Mary. He lived about 30 years of age, and when he was baptized, you remember that dove coming down and sitting on his shoulders? That was really the Christ. That was when God sent the Christ down, and the Christ came down and lived in the man Jesus. And then, 3 years later, right before they nailed Jesus to the cross, the Christ left him and went back up to heaven. So, Jesus was here, but the Christ was not here. And so they explained it, you see, in that way. And that's why John is going to be making those attacks. I don't care, he said, whether you think he was here or how you explain it, there's one thing you have to say. If you do not say that Jesus Christ came in the flesh, you are a liar and an antichrist. And just makes it that plain. Okay, any questions? If not, class dismissed.